Hey guys, I'm Greg. This is Stephanie. We are back with Island Stories. We're both real estate agents here in the Florida Keys, so if you're looking to buy or sell, go ahead and reach out to us. And we have a very special guest today. Stephanie, kick it off.
Okay, so I probably won't do you justice because you're amazing, but I'm going to try. So we have Jen Goldbeck with us, and you probably, if you're familiar with Jen, you probably know her as Dog Mom to the Golden Ratio on Instagram and TikTok. But Jen is also the author of a yet to be released but soon to be released book called The Purest Bond, which I want to get into and talk about because it sounds like it's going to be amazing. Plus three other books. You're also a professor, you're a researcher, you're a TEDx speaker. You've published over 200 peer-reviewed articles, which I know is an amazing feat. So you're an amazing person. We are here to talk to you about the Golden Ratio because we're dog people, but I wanted to make sure I presence all the amazing things about you because you're more than just a wonderful dog mom. So thank you for being here, Jen.
I'm so excited. And the dogs are definitely like the coolest part of my life.
Us too. I do want to say thank you to La Creperie and Veep for letting us shoot the podcast.
Absolutely.
Yes. Thank you, Julie.
Yes. So Jen, I was holding all my questions, or most of my questions, until we started rolling, but I have a million questions for you. So, can you tell us about the Golden Ratio, how it started, how you got into your rescue work?
Yeah. So, just in terms of, like, getting the dogs into my life. So, I had had, like, when I finished undergrad, actually right before I got my first puppy, I smuggled her into the dorm for, like, 2 weeks until I had an apartment. And so, I had two dogs that I got, I guess, in, like, 99 and 2000.
Okay.
And they were great, and they both lived long, happy lives. And when they died, I got a puppy named Hopper. And I had also looked into rescuing. Like, I had kind of flirted with the rescue group in D.C. where I was. And eventually they came and interviewed, and I had just taken care of these old, sick dogs at the end of their life. And they were like, maybe you should foster dogs. And so I did a lot of that for a while. Did eventually get another puppy, so I kind of had two permanent residents. That was Venkman. And then I must have fostered 20 dogs, where I'd have them for 2 or 3 weeks, adopt them out to good homes. And then I was like, you know what, I need a break, because it's like stressful for our dogs. It's a lot of work. And I had just been doing one after the other. And so the rescue group was like, sure, no problem. I took our last foster, I dropped him off at his adoptive home, got home to a voicemail from the rescue that's like, listen, we got this bonded pair. No one could take him. Could you please just foster these two dogs? And then we promise you'll get a break. And I was like, sure. And they showed up. And it, for the first time, I was like, oh, these dogs have always lived here.
Yeah.
Right? They just felt.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, now I have four dogs. I always swore I would never have three. Now I have four.
Yeah.
So we adopted them. And they were great. That was Maggie and Jasmine. And about a year after that, the rescue called again. They're like, would you take this 13-year-old? Like, people don't want her anymore. And I called my husband. And I was like, what do you think?
Yeah.
I mean, I always want to say yes, but I always.
Right.
And he's like, what difference is it between four and five?
Right.
So that's how we ended up with a big squad.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're several iterations past that because we do take a lot of old dogs and special needs in hospice cases.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's how we got to a big group. So we fluctuate between usually 5 and 7.
Uh-huh.
And they're big dogs too. So they're golden retrievers.
Yeah.
Your story actually sounded very familiar to our story when we were in Gainesville.
Yeah.
Because we helped with a lot of dogs and we, you know, at one time we had,
Well, we had a mom who had puppies, so that's a lot, and then ours, and I don't even know
it,
lost count
after a while. But
it's the same thing, where it's like, we're going to be done,
fantastic.
And then it's like, but we have this special, you know, case.
Special needs one.
And you're like, what do we say? Of course, you know.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, what do you wish people knew or understood about fostering or adopting differently abled or end of life, like hospice or, you know, just older dogs? Cause I feel like there's such a stigma around them and people don't understand like how wonderful it is. So like, what's the message if you could like tell people the truth of the matter? Like,
yeah. You know, when I first started looking into it, I was talking to my parents about it. And they had always had one or two Goldens growing up and they were like, you know, if a dog like that is coming in to rescue, it's cause something's wrong with it.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay. And the fact is, every dog I've taken in, and we've probably fostered or adopted 30 or 40, I mean, a lot of them.
Yeah.
The only thing that's wrong with them is the people who had them before.
Right.
you know? And sometimes absolutely it's malicious and bad and abusive, and sometimes it's just people didn't know what they were getting into,
yeah,
and the dog hasn't had training. But when you take an old one or a special needs one, I mean, I don't know if you guys have experienced this, but like you can really see the gratitude that they have for suddenly being taken care of, because if they're coming in, they weren't getting what they needed before. And I'm going to make myself all weepy.
Yeah.
It's like such an honor,
yes,
at the end of their life,
yes,
to be able to give them like a kind, gentle, peaceful,
yeah,
you know, beautiful end,
yeah,
even if it's short. And some of them we have for a couple months, but you know, usually we get a few years. Like,
yeah,
what an amazing thing to be able to do.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm all weepy,
yeah,
about it. It's so rewarding.
Yeah.
It's really a thing where, like, you know, I've done a lot of, like, great professional things. I'm,
yeah,
very proud of my career. But this is a thing where, like, I'm like, oh, this is really what my life's mission,
yeah,
is, to, you know, to take care of these dogs.
Yeah. That's really beautiful. And you're taking the words right out of my mouth, like, because I feel like when, especially if you have a heart for it, right, you do it. And it almost feels weird, like, when people say, like, you're an amazing person, or they'll, like, say, like, oh my gosh, they're so lucky to have you. And I feel like we always say, it is our honor. Like,
yeah,
what a joy, and how lucky are we that we get to, like, help this, you know, animal who's been failed so many times, but, like, we get to show them, like, what it is to be loved, or, like, a blanket, or, you know, being able to sleep as long as they want, and, you know, or their skin is going to be cleared up and they're not itchy all the time, whatever it is, to, like, relieve them of that, like, pain, whether it's, like, psychological or physical. And so, like, I always feel like that's what I wish that you could, like, communicate to people, is, like, that feeling of knowing that they're grateful, and, like, knowing that you helped alleviate some of their suffering in some form or fashion. Like, what a beautiful, like, gift to get to experience doing that for, you know, this otherwise helpless being. So,
but I feel like you definitely see that though,
oh,
from the
sure.
dogs. Like, I will use Winnie as an
yeah.
example. When we first rescued her, she couldn't walk. She had, they said she was what, 12 or 13.
Yeah.
Her teeth were bad, and she truly looked like she was on death's door. And we got her groomed. She's a Shih Tzu, so we got her groomed, and man, it was just like you could start seeing the light come back, and you're her people.
Yeah.
Like, when we look back on videos that we took years ago, you get because you're seeing how bad they were and how good they are now, and it's just like, it truly is just fantastic to experience it and
yeah.
and be a part of that animal's life and help it get back to its what it was
mm-hmm.
before the human, most likely before them,
failed,
majorly
yeah.
neglected them.
Yeah.
So
yeah. absolutely.
I don't know. I think it's fantastic.
Yeah. And I want to underline too, what you said about there's nothing wrong with the dog or the animal who's in rescue, except for the failings of the person who was responsible for them before they came in. Like, I think that that's like such an important message, because I think a lot of people do think that they're like, something's wrong with them, they're used, like there's something, like you're inheriting like some problem animal, and it's like, that's not the case. Like, you're getting the most amazing family member, you know, most of the time. And yeah, I think everyone, all dogs have their own personalities and their own, you know, hang-ups the way that people do. Like, we all have our own personalities.
That's
none
right.
of us are perfect, but like, we love each other through those, like, you know, imperfections or whatever. And it's yeah, so we're totally on the same page as you. We're so, like,
I was gonna say, I think you guys could be best friends.
I know. We'll talk after. No, but so you and your hubby do this together. So is he as passionate about it as you are?
He is,
mm-hmm.
And always has been.
Yeah.
I dated one guy once who wasn't a dog person.
Oh.
That was like very
what?
Short, and I was like,
red flag alert.
So much. But one of the best things about him, not just with respect to the dogs, but in general, is that like he's game for anything. Like, whatever crazy plan I come up with, he's like, yeah, that's cool. He's just like so laid back about it, like goes into it enthusiastic. And, you know, especially since COVID, he shifted to working remotely, you know, working at home with COVID,
mm-hmm.
Where before he was like a real solid office guy. He's really stepped into like a more active dog dad role.
Yeah.
You know, where before I had a way more flexible schedule, so I was doing vet visits
yeah.
and like all the stuff. And now he's actually doing more of it than me, because I've got a little more away stuff, and it's just great.
Yeah.
You know? And he loves it. So yeah. And I like to tell everybody, and it's absolutely true, all the dogs like him better than me. I'm like, I picked you. Right. Like, I saved you. And they're like, but he's so nice. So, yeah, it's great to have a team. I don't think we could do five very intensely needy dogs.
Yeah.
If it weren't the pair of us.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
Working together.
Yeah, working together. So, tell me about your RV.
Oh, we did a podcast. We do a podcast where we talk about the dogs. And I think back in like 2017, there's an episode of the podcast where I say, I will never get an RV. I hate them so much. Which people remind me of because we did, we bought our house here in the Keys in 2018.
Yeah.
And we were kind of back and forth a lot. Mm-hmm. We were maybe here half time. And in 2019, I was like, you know, if we're going to keep doing this, we can't fit five dogs in one car. So we were caravanning. We both have to drive the 20 hours each way and stop all the time. And so I was like, you know what? Like, let's get like cheap RV, but where you can walk from the driver part into the back,
yeah.
And it has a bathroom, and we can switch off. And very presciently, I like to think, we bought that RV in February of 2020.
Wow.
So it really served us well during lockdown time. But yeah, it lets us drive back and forth to our house in Maryland. I have to go up there for work sometimes, and we only have to drive 10 hours each.
Yeah.
And there's a bed.
Yeah.
There's a bathroom.
Yeah.
So it's kind of the dog mobile. It's, you go in there and it smells like dog. It's like, you know, five dogs in this tiny little
room. Yeah.
But it's been great. I don't like camping in it. I'm not a camper.
Yeah.
But it's good for driving.
Good for driving with your pups.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And you have, like you said, five right now, right?
Wait, yes.
So I have their names. So Vank, Guac, Feta, Remy, and CB, who's actually named Chief Brody, but he's referred to as CB. Is that right?
Chief Brody's a mouthful.
Chief Brody, yeah. So can you tell us where their names came from?
Yeah. Okay. So we have three food dogs and two movie dogs.
Okay.
So Feta is like the cheese.
Yep.
So we had that 13-year-old dog that kind of is the first one that brought us to five.
Yeah.
Her name when we rescued her was Casey.
Mm.
And we like to change their names if they come from traumatic backgrounds, but keep it similar.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So she kind of very naturally became a queso.
Okay.
And it's fun. So like Qdoba like would send her stuff and she was really just a big teddy bear and everybody loved her. So she died. We lost two dogs like within a week at the beginning of 2020, like January 2020. And so I took in Guac, who was nameless. He was dropped at a shelter, so I got to pick. So I named him Guacamole in honor of Queso.
Yes.
And then we've had a whole bunch of food dogs, and especially cheese dogs. So he was Guacamole to go with Queso, but we've had a Parmesan, a Manchego, a Cheddar, a Nacho, Feta. I'm probably leaving one out.
Yeah.
A lot of food dogs.
Yes.
Remoulade, we were going to call him Roquefort, another cheese dog.
Uh-huh.
And his name was Remy.
Okay.
And I was like, he looks more like a Remoulade, and we can still call him Remy.
Yeah.
So that's the food dogs.
Yeah.
Vinkman is
Ghostbusters, right?
Yes, Bill Murray's character in Ghostbusters, which I thought everyone would know when I gave him that.
No. Really?
Like 15 people ever have known where
really?
It's from. I know. Clearly it had an impact on me and not on everybody else. And then Chief Brody is the police officer in Jaws.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Okay. Oh, my gosh. That's so amazing.
And we actually got, like, one of the Jaws beaches closed, no swimming signs, and we got him a little, like, bandana with an Amity Police logo on it. So there's a really cute picture of him, like, in cosplay.
Oh, my gosh. Brody. That's so funny. So what made me think of it was the... So that you said you have five. I'm thinking of the five in the RV. But recently, I think I saw on your Instagram that I think maybe your husband took a solo trip with one of the pups, and I can't remember which one, to Canada, right?
Yes. Yeah, that was Hopper. So we lost her at the end of June. She had
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, she'd had cancer and had one of her legs amputated 2 years ago and had really bad arthritis in the remaining leg.
Okay.
So we wanted to get her Librela, which is a great new medicine. It's a monoclonal antibody for arthritis in dogs.
Mm.
And it had been approved in the US, but it wasn't shipping, but it had been approved in Canada longer. So we literally, like, through social media, found a vet in Canada, in Niagara Falls, who was like, oh, give her Librela. And so he drove her from Key West to Niagara Falls, Canada, and got her a shot and brought back a few vials. And I'm like, you have to go to the falls and get a honeymoon picture. Because she loved him so much.
Aww.
And so there's a great picture of her at the falls and then him holding her because she couldn't really stand at that point at the falls. So I don't think she's ever been happier than like getting him solo for a week on that road trip.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, they had such a beautiful time.
Yeah.
Well, and that brings me to the cost of what you do.
Yeah.
Like I was looking on the website, you talk about that on your foundation website, which is what I want to talk about. There was one of the pups you talked about that has cluster seizures. And
Voodoo.
I think that the total was like around $30,000 a year, even after pet insurance, right?
Yeah, that's right.
So you created a 501c3 foundation. GoldenRatioFoundation.org is your website where people can go and support the work that you're doing, right?
Yeah, we're fortunate that we both make good livings and we don't live an extravagant lifestyle, I guess, except for having five dogs.
Yeah, right. Medically needy dogs.
We can afford it, but Voodoo, and we did eventually lose him to the seizures about a year ago. But when we took him in, it's because of the seizures that his previous family couldn't take care of him.
Yeah.
So the pet insurance doesn't cover pre-existing conditions.
Yeah.
And at the time, now we have an emergency vet in the Keys, but at the time we didn't. So he'd have these seizures and my husband, Inga, would have to at 2 a.m. drive him up to Miami to go. And he'd sometimes spend a week there in kind of intensive care. So it adds up very fast. And we could afford it. But what we found is we have all these followers on social media who are very invested in the dogs and wanted to help. And we always felt bad taking money from people. Like, we felt like we're doing really well. The money should go the other way.
Yeah.
But we also realized that it makes people feel good to help them and they want to be involved.
Yeah.
So we decided like a nonprofit's the way to do it. So we can't spend their money on vacations or whatever booze and, use it to support the dogs. And, it's been great. People, when we have things go wrong, people donate, and it let us do things like for Hopper, the one who went to Niagara Falls, we got her, custom made brace for that front leg.
Yeah.
We got her a cart, together. That was probably $4,000.
Wow.
And it's a thing where like, we probably could have afforded it, but we didn't even need to think about it because we knew the foundation could support it.
Yeah.
And we support other dogs too. So we have right now one dog that we had formerly fostered that we're supporting medical bills for, another golden that one of our board members took in who was heartworm positive and so has gone through that. So it's not, we donate some to research, we donate some to like help other dogs and then, support our squad.
Yeah. So they can do it through the website, thegoldenratiofoundation.org. Are there other places like on your link tree where they can send money, or is it just like through the website? Is that where you direct people?
Yep,
just to the website?
That's the way to do it. It just comes through PayPal. It's really easy.
And it's Golden Ratio, not the Golden Ratio.
Yeah,
right?
goldenratiofoundation.org. And it's a 501c3, so
but I'll link it anyways, guys.
Yeah, but tax deductible.
Tax deductible.
Yeah, which is amazing. I love that. And I love to hear that you use it for your pups, which is a worthy cause by itself, but also that you pay it forward into research and some of these other things, like in supporting other animals who, like you said, may not be able to save their family except for support from foundations like you or other grants or things that can help with the high cost of certain medical procedures and things like that. So I think that's lovely.
Some are so expensive. And so Voodoo, for example, who was the very expensive dog that kind of started this, he eventually died from epilepsy. And when he died, we took a bunch of money, a bunch of donations came in at the end of his life, which was tough. And so we donated a bunch of that to the AKC Epilepsy Research Fund, where they're actually funding scientific research into epilepsy for dogs. So it felt like a good way to honor him, by taking money that people wanted to help support him to support lots of other people who are dealing with dogs who have that same problem.
Yeah. Oh.
I could see you're emotional, like as we're talking about
it.
No, but it's so beautiful. Like if you're a dog person, like I think you get it. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So thank you for sharing it.
Of course,
it's beautiful, but it's hard also.
I love them all so much. It's like great to talk about them.
Yeah, absolutely. So can we talk about your book a little bit?
Yes.
Okay. So tell us about your book.
So I am a scientist. My PhD is in computer science and I do kind of social media, artificial intelligence research. And, but a lot of like public science communication. And during the early parts of lockdown, when everybody was starting to adopt dogs to have one at home, I had talked with now my book agent about this idea of a kind of popular science book about all the ways that having a dog makes our life better. Because there's like volumes of research on this that's really fascinating. So I worked with Stacy Colino, who's a science writer in Washington, D.C., and we just had the best time looking at, you know, whether it's like service dogs or your dog knowing that you're having a heart attack or, you know, how do dogs help your kids? All of the ways that, like, your life physically, emotionally, psychologically is better having dogs in it, and, like, what's the science behind that?
Yeah.
So it's a very feel-good book, which I feel like there aren't a lot of those now, and it covers kind of at the beginning, like, how to pick a dog and build a bond with them, all, you know, these applications, and then end-of-life stuff as well. So a question that we get a lot, not to, like, bring it back to me crying, but, on social media, because, you know, I think we've lost 15 dogs, you know, that we've taken in the last 5 years. And we go through that very publicly on social media because it's an important thing for people to see, right? That's part of the process. So we get a lot of questions from people who are like, I don't know when it's time. I don't know how to make this decision. So we have one whole chapter in the book that's just like, here's stuff to think about. Like, no one can ever give you the right answer, right? Yeah. But here's how to think about quality of life. We have a little survey that doesn't give you like a if it's above or below kind of threshold, but more so you can kind of see over time and think about different aspects. And then we have a chapter on grieving, which is our last chapter, because it's so not supported, right? Like, you can't take off work for a week when your dog dies. Most people don't understand it. But like, if it were your mom, you could. If it were your friend, you could. And for a lot of people, they feel closer to their dogs than even their relatives.
Absolutely,
right? It's a very profound relationship. And so we call it, in psychology, we call it disenfranchised grief. Like, you're mourning, and society doesn't give you the rituals, the time, the space to deal with that. So I think, you know, it's not the happiest chapter of the book, obviously, but I think it's one for people with dogs that it acknowledges, like, how profound this bond is that you have. And it kind of gives you a space in the book also to, like, acknowledge that, like, this is a thing I don't really get to do. So it's this really joyful exploration that also I hope is really validating for people who have dogs to appreciate, like, how important that relationship is.
Yeah, absolutely. It is so important. And you're right. I mean, I love that term that you said, the disenfranchised grief. Like, it's almost like grief that doesn't have anywhere to go. Like, socially, like, the norms are just kind of, like, a lot of people have the idea of, like, it's just a dog or something like that. And it's like, no, like, that's our child.
We're not friends. we're not friends with those people. But no, some people do have that.
Yeah.
That thought.
And I think there's research that backs that up as well, that, like, people feel more of a kinship and a bond with their animals because animals are not judgmental. There's not, like,
they don't
that
care
sort
what
of,
you
like,
do.
Fraught, like, with your sibling, maybe, right? Like, it's like, well, it's complicated. Like, I love them, but, like, also they, but, like, with animals, they just love you unconditionally. So, of course, like, that bond sometimes is actually stronger than with the people in your life.
For sure. And like, a really fascinating thing we found is that when, in some psychology, when you're looking at, like, mothers and infants bonding, we talk about something called attachment bonds, and that's, like, how they bond. And you can actually see this, like, if you do a functional MRI, which is things, what parts of your brain light up. If you have infants, like, hear their mother's voice, a certain part of their brain lights up. And they've done studies with dogs where they'll show them pictures of their human owner's faces or their smell, and the same part of a dog's brain lights up that lights up in an infant when they see their mom. So it's like, biologically, your dog loves you, and, like, we can see it in their brains, and they're attached to us the same way that babies are attached to their moms. And you know, we've measured it in people. Obviously, we have those same connections to our dogs. So it's something where, like, in psychology, we know, like, this is the foundation of the most important relationships we have.
Yeah.
And it's there scientifically in every way with our dogs too.
Yeah.
And it's great. I mean, I think it's so powerful to be like, this is the science that says, like, it's not just a toy.
Yes.
It's not a thing.
Yes.
It's a really important relationship.
Yes. Here's the science and the data that backs up. Yeah. So do you have an opinion about or thoughts about things that we could do in our society or things that we could change in our society that would be, you know, more supportive of the grief and the grieving that a lot of people are not allowed to go through? Do you have thoughts of, like, what you wish you could change?
Yeah. I mean, if I could come up with anything, and this is, like, a big ask that I probably can't fix, like, one thing that's so useful when we're mourning people is that there's, like, a formal ritual to that grieving process. And, you know, it varies. You know, if you're Jewish, you'll sit Shiva. And then which I was not raised Jewish, but I think most of my friends are Jewish now. And it's like, what a profound thing to spend 7 days where like your whole community supports you, like grieving. You know, I grew up Catholic and there's still like, you have a big, long, boring funeral mass and a process, and like everybody gets together and like probably has too much to drink and like eats afterwards. Mm-hmm. And there's a thing, right? But there's a formal mourning ritual that you get to have.
Yeah.
And like we can make those up for our dogs, but it's not the same thing as like a socially sanctioned formal thing where like even if you, you know, aren't religious and don't believe in it, like you go to the church that you grew up in or whatever and do that ritual, it still has meaning for you. Mm-hmm. And I think it would be, it's a thing we don't have for losing our pets, where I think that that would be
so true.
Really useful.
Yeah.
But look, an easier solution is we need more grief counselors for people who lose their dogs.
Yeah.
You know, because a lot of people have a really hard time. The average grieving process is 6 months to a year for a dog. So a lot of people need therapy for that.
Yeah.
And it'd be great, you know, if we had, there are some people out there, but I think it's a space where if anybody's looking to get a second career, like become a grief counselor for people
pet
who lose
loss.
Their pets. I could have used it for plenty of mine.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. No, that's so true. I've never even thought about that. But yeah, like someone who specializes in that and like just being able to be in those feelings with you and like validate you in that, because like so many people invalidate those feelings and makes you feel worse. That's so true. Well, thank you for including that in your book, because it's so difficult, but also important and very much, I think, not attended to in our society, like you said, but anyone who has lost a pet knows how important and how painful that is.
Yeah.
So you also mentioned that in the beginning or towards the front of your book, you talk about choosing your pet baby and bonding with them. And I think that that's something that a lot of people don't really understand. And that leads to a lot of problems, especially like in rescue even, but not always in rescue, because you can pick the wrong puppy too. But a lot of times in rescue, people misunderstand the personality of the dog, or that they're choosing based on because that they have a green eye and a blue eye and
spots.
Think it's cute or something, you know. So what would you, if you're able to impart some wisdom on our listeners about how to effectively choose their furry family member and like appropriately bond with them, like what are some tips that you would give?
Yeah, I mean, I think you guys probably know this since you've rescued dogs, right? Like when you bring them into your house the first time, so they're super stressed because they don't know what's going on. And they need all different kinds of space and handling and treatment, right? Some of them want to be touching you all the time.
Yep.
I mean, we've had some come in and they're just like perfect. They're like laying on you, hugging me the first night, and it's great.
Yeah.
And we've had Queso, who we brought in, she would not come out from under the dining room table for weeks.
Yeah.
And we actually were renting down here in December, I guess, 2017, so right after Irma, and we had, there was a spare bedroom in the house we rented, and that's it. Like, she did not want to come out of there. She didn't want to talk to everybody. It's so important that you are willing to kind of meet them where they are, and your whole focus, especially with the rescue, I think puppies too, but especially with the rescue, really has to be like, what do they need, and how can I make them feel safe and comfortable and trust me? And it doesn't matter if you want to take them to sit on a patio.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Yeah. It doesn't matter if your kid wants to get in there and hug them. I mean, I think this is such a good test, right? Like, golden retrievers are super lovey dogs. There's some where if I, like, lean in to give them a smooch on the face, Guacamole turns his face away from me, you know? And there's other ones who are, like, right up there, like, licking your face. And they're telling you something about the personal space they need. Like, you might be able to, I can kiss him on the face if I want to, but he's showing me that he doesn't really want that. And I think when you take a dog, like, you want to think about, like, what are the things you want to be able to do with them, and what's the dog that actually wants that, and be responsive to that. You can, you know, if you're adopting a rescue, you know, if you're fostering, you get what you get, and you pay attention. If you're thinking of one to like bring in, you can better your chances by, you know, getting a little on their background, but you also have to be willing to just understand what they need and give them what they need.
Mm-hmm.
That lets you form a bond, and from there you can take it in a lot of different directions.
Yeah. So I think it's so important, and I think it's almost like a paradigm shift, because I feel like a lot of people go into the idea of bringing a pet into their home through whatever method where it's like, we have this shaped puzzle piece and we're going to go pick this being, this soul, right? And they need to fit into this shaped puzzle piece, instead of looking at it and going, you know, we have love to give and we
are open to who this being is, and we are going to give space and time to learn and understand and be responsive to, like, this individual's needs. And I think that it's kind of backwards. A lot of people go into it with, like, they have this checklist of the things that they need instead of going into it thinking, I want to meet and get to know this pup. And also, like, having the idea of, you know, I want an athletic dog because I'm very active, or, you know, we're not very active, and so we probably don't want an athletic dog. A lot of people, I think, get in their emotions, or they pick based off of, like, what the animal looks like. So,
well, then that dog ends up getting returned.
Right.
When it doesn't fit in that piece that they were hoping it would fit in. Well, it doesn't fit. Let's take it back, and then let's get another one.
And which goes back to what we were talking about what's wrong with the dog. Well, nothing. It was a bad choice by the human who chose them, and then sometimes they come back worse than they were, even, because they've been jostled around, even. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think what you said is so wise, and just also kind of paying attention to what they're telling you through their body language. Like you were saying, like, you know, you can kind of override their consent. I know that sounds so weird. We talk about this sometimes, like, people probably think I'm crazy if I'm talking about, like, Winnie doesn't consent to me, like, petting her head, but she'll tell you, Winnie does not like this. She likes this. You can do this, but she will shrink away no matter what. If you try to touch her head or her ears, it's like, they'll tell you, like you were saying, like, you can override it.
Perry does not like kisses, so Perry's our other Shih Tzu. Does not like...
You can force it.
You can go in there, but she turns her head.
Yeah.
But you can snuggle her, and she likes it.
Yeah.
But she does not want to kiss. She'll dodge it.
Yeah.
Or Winnie will take it, I guess.
But I like the idea of making the mindset be getting to know this being and, like, what they like, what they don't like, how they are. Do they need space to decompress? They've just been through, especially if it's like a rescue situation, an extremely stressful period in their life. Who knows how long they've been in the rescue. It's a very stressful shelter environment, and when they come in, sometimes they need 4 weeks to decompress before you know, they're ready to come out and have dinner in front of you or whatever it is. So I think you offer so much wisdom. I'm so excited about your book because you're touching on so many, like, really important things that I think people don't understand. They just don't think about it. It's not common knowledge in our society at all. But hopefully, we can shift that a little bit.
I mean, it's a good way to deal with the people in your life, too.
Absolutely. Right? Like, yes, totally.
Partners or kids.
Yes.
Right? Or, like, what is the thing that you like and what makes you upset? And, like, maybe my mission is to, within my own boundaries, like, do the thing that, like, makes you feel good. Like, it works in everything.
It works in everything.
But it's a thing, I think, it's so easy. Like, we can get such a vision of what we want our life with our dogs to be.
Yeah.
But you get the dog that you have.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are absolutely some situations where it's like, I get that this was an untenable situation.
Yes.
Like, that definitely happens. Where it doesn't, everyone has the best intents and you've tried. I mean, we've had to rehome a dog that we were fostering that we intended to keep. Yeah, he started fighting. You know, we have Remy, who's a permanent dog with us. He was on a chain for 6 years and I think probably got attacked sometimes. So if a dog snaps at him, he's very reactive.
Yeah.
And Nacho was the dog that we had rescued from Idaho and we thought we were going to keep. And he was a kind of resource guardy food and snapped at Remy and they had a big fight. And then they started having fights and we brought them to training. Like, we did intensive sleepaway training with a great trainer. But I mean, I got bitten once trying to break a fight up. Yeah. They were fighting all the time. Like, it just, you know, it had happened and then they were at that threshold.
Right.
So it was like, we can't possibly do this. They can't be with each other.
Right.
And it's great. Like, we found, you know, Nacho was a year and a half old. We found him a family with, like, they've got a house in the Outer Banks and, like, 20 acres in the country in Virginia. And he's so happy and so much more relaxed.
Yeah.
Like, we weren't the right environment.
Right.
It was heartbreaking and terrible.
Of course.
But it's not, we tried everything to give him what he needed. And what he needed was a house with fewer dogs.
Yeah.
But most of the time, you actually can meet the dogs with what they need. And that's got to be your job.
Yeah.
Right? It is exactly like you said. It's another soul.
Yeah.
And you have a responsibility to them.
Yeah.
That's not just pick a thing that fits.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So Feta.
Yeah.
The new baby. Okay. So I was curious about Feta because you take t-
typically like medically needy or hospice or like senior pups. So how did Feta come to be in the fold?
So we lost Hopper, who was our three-legged dog at the end of June. And I reached out to the rescue group we work with, and I was like, we have four dogs now. This is not enough dogs. It's absolutely empty in our house. We are ready, and we can also take a pair if you want, because we often have six. So we, like, on around the 4th of July, we were going to take in this pair, a bonded pair, and then the family backed out. And then at the beginning of August, we were going to take a different pair who was like being abused, and it's all very sad. Oh. And the person giving them up backed out, and so they're still in that abusive situation. Oh. And it keeps me up at night, but you can't make people do it. And so twice these things had fallen through, and literally at the day after we were supposed to pick up that pair, the rescue called, and I think they felt bad.
We have this shiny puppy.
Would you take a puppy? And I'm like, why is there a 3-month-old puppy in the rescue? Right. And it was as good a situation it can be. This like 80-year-old couple had bought her like from an Amish farm, which like people don't do that. Like they're generally really bad situations, but bought her from an Amish breeder, had her for 5 days, and we're like, oh, we can't handle this puppy, which like they probably couldn't,
right?
Especially golden puppies are crazy.
Yeah.
So instead of bringing her back to the farm, thankfully they gave her to the rescue, and so we got her. So she's like a fresh puppy, the dog, first dog without trauma I've had.
Oh, wow. My god.
Oh my god. So she's still technically a foster.
Yeah.
And then she will get spayed on Halloween. That okay. We have to spay dogs in our rescue group, and then we get first dibs if we want to keep her.
So do you think she will be a permanent resident?
It will remain a mystery unless you release the podcast after Halloween. But I'm so in love with her. Aww. I thought, because normally adult dogs, no housebreaking. I mean, you can housebreak an adult dog in a day, right? They're trained. They don't need everything. And I was like, this is going to be like annoying and cute for 3 months, and I'll be very happy to pass around to someone else. And it was the first time in my life I felt any maternal instinct, like holding that little worm puppy. I love her so much.
Yeah.
And it's been really interesting how easy she's been to train with four other big dogs to show her this is how we behave in this house.
Yeah.
I mean, she was housebroken in 2 weeks. Like, she'll occasionally have an accident, but she doesn't chew the wires. She doesn't, she's not destructive. She's great.
So what do the other kids think about her?
Guac is a little annoyed by her.
Okay.
Chief Brody, who's our old man, he's 13. He doesn't do anything. He sleeps all the time.
Yeah.
But Remy, who was best friends with Voodoo, the epileptic dog, and has not had a good playmate since we lost Voodoo. Like, we hoped Nacho, and then they started fighting.
Yeah.
He is so in love with her. He finally has someone who will just play with
him,
zoom around, so they are, like, absolute BFFs. And Venkman is also a good playmate, but Remy and Feta are a great pairing. It's so nice. I felt so bad that he like didn't have someone who really would play with him. And she's now, sometimes he's like, Mom, like, please hide me from
that. That is too much.
She is a lot. But yeah, it's quite different. But I was thinking about it a couple weeks ago, and like, we had Hopper and Venkman. I got them both as puppies. So Hopper died in June. She was 10. Vinkman's 9 now, and she's fine. But 9 is old for a golden retriever. Mm-hmm. And I was like, eventually we're going to lose her, and then we won't have any dogs that didn't have trauma. Right? Mm-hmm. All the other dogs are sort of messed up. But now there's Feta, who like we got, and we're going to be able to raise her, you know, from 3 months old. So she can really be the new like future ambassador to help all those other dogs come in to see like it's going to be okay. So
I think you just told us your answer.
I know.
She'll be the future ambassador till Halloween.
Yeah, till Halloween, guys.
There's no way I could give her up. I love her so much.
Yeah,
yeah, she's going to stay.
She's so precious. So how did you guys end up in the Florida Keys?
So in like 2012, I read a new magazine, like on an airplane magazine, about Little Palm Island, which everybody knows up there.
Yeah.
And I was like, let's go there for vacation. You know, I could afford like 2 days.
Right.
It's a very expensive place to go.
5-star, guys.
Amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was my first time visiting the Keys, and we literally like got there, and I think I cried because it was so beautiful.
Yeah.
And I mean, it is really like the jewel of the Keys. Mm-hmm. It's gorgeous. And but I remember clearly having this thought, like, this is the spot on the planet that I actually was supposed to have been my whole life, which I've never felt like that. And so We started coming to Little Palm Island like 3 or 4 times a year. Like, we'd literally be booking the next trip on the plane back up. And at some point I was like, we could pay a mortgage about for the amount of money we're spending on these very expensive vacations. And I kind of set up a 5-year plan to buy a house. And about 6 months later, we were down here. It was just after Irma. Mm-hmm. And so Little Palm was closed for like 3 years because they took a lot of damage. But so we were here in Key West for vacation, and I was like Zillow stalking. And I was like, there's this one house that's been on the market. It's on the open water. It's everything I want. But it's been on the market for like 9 months, and it's way cheaper than all the other houses. I'm like, let's just go look at it. Mm-hmm. And we went, and it was a mess. You know, it was like a very old couple had lived there. The husband had died. Kind of a hoarding situation. Everything in that house was broken, but it's like a hurricane fortress, like, you know, concrete block.
Yeah.
Nothing happened except they lost the screens in Irma.
Wow.
And I was like, that's important.
Yeah.
That's very, I mean, that's pretty good.
Yeah. For Irma. Yeah.
And it's on the open water and it's up on Sugarloaf Key and it's just like this beautiful view. And I was like, well, I can fix everything else.
Yeah.
So literally, like, we saw the house. This is more a description of me than anything else. We went to the cafe here in Key West for lunch. I applied for a mortgage online and put in an offer, you know, within like 4 hours of seeing the house. I was like, this is it. This is the one I want.
When you know, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we bought it, you know, in 2018, and we're kind of back and forth. And I had hoped in 2019 to spend more time. And then with COVID, you know, I got to work remote. My husband started working remote. So we were, you know, based here, and it's been amazing. Like, there's such a, you know, such a community here in the Keys. Like, you really feel like you're part of a community in a way that I haven't felt anywhere else that I've lived, and is so nice, a thing that I didn't know that I was missing.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I'm in love.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we totally resonate with what you're saying, where you just like almost feel like your soul like is where like it's supposed to be, and you don't like feel it other places. And it's just, we're very much, I think we're all kindred spirits, because it's like rescue dogs and the Florida Keys and psychology.
Yeah. I tell people, like, when I step off the plane in Key West, and for people who haven't flown here, like, you walk into the air, right? You walk onto the tarmac to get off. Like, I feel like there is a fist that has been clenched inside me, and it, like, lets go.
Mm-hmm.
Or when you come across that causeway, too, if you're driving in from the mainland, like, it smells different here, it feels different, and it's the first time I've been able to, like, relax like that.
I was gonna say, it's like you just relax, and that's kind of, I mean, because I've been coming here my whole life, and we always would come for mini season, and it's almost like you look forward to that every year, and then the second year, like, in the Keys, that's when you almost say, well, it only takes us 2 hours to get there. You still have 2 more hours once you're in the Keys, but you're in the Keys, and it's kind of like it just washes away a little bit.
And, that's right.
And you get to relax, and those worries or whatever maybe aren't as heavy as they were. So
can you tell a difference energetically in the dogs, like when they're in the Keys versus when they're in Maryland or somewhere else? Like, do they seem more relaxed here as well?
Oh, they love it.
Yeah.
They love it here. It's really interesting because when we still work with the rescue group in DC, so a lot of times when we take dogs in, you know, it'll be there. So we'll go up to DC, we'll take them in. We still have our house up there. So they'll spend like a week at our house in Maryland. And then we'll bring them down here. And especially with the old ones, it's so interesting where they've kind of lived up north for a long time, to see them get here, and especially to go into the water.
Yeah.
And they're like arthritic and old, and they get in that warm water, and they can be in there all year and kind of like take the weight off.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, Brody, our old guy, loves to just like, we say that he's like a plant, right? He was supposed to be out in the sun, like soaking it up to recharge himself.
Yeah.
It does wonders for them to be down here. Like, they live a perfectly happy life up there. And
sure.
Love running around.
Yeah.
But they're always happy to be back here.
Yeah. The sunshine, the salt, the water. And I love that. Like, whenever I see them, like, on the ramp on your Instagram, like, going in, or like, Feta's like, I'm not sure. And then, like, goes off the side of the ramp or something.
And now it's like, Feta loves it, right?
Yeah. Oh, she loves it. She's going to be jumping off the dock within a week or so, I think. She's getting bigger. She's like 30 pounds now.
Oh,
and Guac is a dock jumper. And she very much idolizes him. He keeps her in her place.
Yeah.
But she really wants to be like Guac. Yeah. So I think she's going to
fall. So she'll be jumping soon.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right.
She's like, watch this, Guac.
Yeah.
He's like, whatever, kid.
That's exactly it. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. So, okay. So you have your book that's coming out, and you have a couple of like book signings. You have one specifically at Books and Books here in Key West. So can you tell us the details on what that whole thing is going to be?
Yes. So very exciting. We're hoping it's going to be big.
Yeah.
Like, fingers crossed for New York Times bestseller list.
Yes.
Don't
okay.
know.
Yes.
So you can pre-order the book now from okay. anywhere. Release date is November 14th. Mm-hmm. So we're doing an event with all the dogs up in Winter Park, which is right by Orlando. So that's going to be a chaotic mm-hmm.
yes.
fun time.
Yeah.
So if anyone wants to meet the dogs, you can come up there. But yeah, we're doing a signing at Books and Books, which is here in Key West mm-hmm. on the 18th, that Saturday
okay.
of book release week
yep.
From 12 to 2.
Okay.
So me and my co-author, Stacy, will be here.
Okay.
We're having a private party at the Hemingway House for the book on the 19th.
Nice.
So all our friends are going to be here. So it's going to be really fun.
Amazing. So yeah. will the pups be at the Books and Books signing or no?
Still negotiating.
Okay.
Maybe one, like Vink or Feta
okay.
might come,
okay.
Assuming they're okay with it.
Yeah.
But you know, the one dog is okay, but we want to make sure the bookstore is okay.
Yeah. It could get a little narrow in there if you have
yeah.
five golden.
Five golden. Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
No, definitely not all five.
Maybe. Yeah, yeah.
You could be in the art side.
Yeah, right, at the exhibit.
Yeah.
About, like, the art,
with
yeah.
all the fine art over there.
Just a little stressful. Oh, my gosh. Okay, so we will link to the
all
book, yes,
yeah.
and everywhere, and then also the events. And is there anything that we haven't
social media
talked about? Well, yeah, I mean, okay, so what do you want to ask about social media?
Well, they have a big following.
Yeah, you guys have an amazing following. So you are on Instagram, The Golden Ratio 4, on Instagram and on TikTok. Those are your two main platforms.
Twitter,
right?
Actually.
Twitter.
And actually, we're like, we have like 600,000 followers on Snapchat. Which
oh,
is like
wow.
A little,
oh
we're
God.
Not even on Snapchat.
Oh, my God.
Snapchat. Who knew?
It's a thing, apparently.
Who knew?
Okay,
youths.
Yeah, you
literally like any platform.
Yeah,
I mean, Blue Sky, everything.
Yeah,
they're the Golden Ratio 4.
Okay.
Yeah, we had the four dogs, the original four, and I'm on social media all the time for work. And so then the 2016 election happened,
mm.
and like everybody on social media was angry, like regardless of
yeah.
who they voted for.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I just need a place to not have that.
Yeah.
And there was no place that I
yeah.
could find. So I was like, well, I will make a place,
yeah.
like four dogs. Everybody loves four golden retrievers. And it really resonated with
yeah.
people. So it grew first on Twitter and then on Instagram to this pretty big thing.
Yeah.
So yeah, we do like a picture a day. And then Snapchat's actually where we put all the like little bits of their day with the little videos.
Oh.
And we export it from Snapchat and post it everywhere else. So
oh,
we get like
okay.
a video and a picture every day
okay.
of happy dogs in the Florida Keys.
Hmm. Yeah. And what I really love about your social media too is that like, it's almost like a vlog of their life, you know. It's like your husband is like dropping like, okay, you get a broccoli, you get a,
here's a
whatever
carrot.
Yeah, like everyone gets their certain treats in their certain areas with the door shut.
Yeah.
it's like it's so real, but you sit and watch it because you're like, this is so precious, and it like is
well,
it
mean,
distresses
you love
you
dogs.
You know, you're just like,
if you don't love dogs, bye.
Exactly.
No, we don't want to know you.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people watch it either like before they go to bed or like in the morning with coffee.
Yeah.
Because like nothing ever happens. It's just like they get their snacks,
yeah.
they
yeah.
go for a swim.
Yes.
Like maybe Guac gets to like come into Key West and like get some French fries.
Right.
So it's really soothing
yes.
and joyful. Nothing bad
yeah.
happens. And it's, you know, 5 minutes to just be like, okay, like
yeah.
these dogs, everything is good in their life.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like a bright spot and it's like all positive and just like feel good. No, you're so right. And you started at the perfect time.
We all needed a little hole.
Yeah.
At that point. And it has continued that we all really
yeah.
just need a little
yeah.
wholesome safe corner.
It's so true.
Nothing bad will be there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for sharing all of them on social media. I know that can be a full-time job.
It is a full-time job.
Post
yeah.
even,
yeah.
you know, anything. So we really appreciate you sharing them. And what have I not asked you that you really wanted to talk about?
We were wide-ranging. You made me cry like four times.
Sorry, but also not
yes.
because
yeah.
like I really enjoyed what we were talking about.
So
but
we're
yes,
under
I know.
Four. We were pretty close.
Yeah. So is there anything else you want to share? Anything else you want
this
to talk
is great.
About?
Thank
okay.
you guys.
That's it.
Thank you so much for taking the time and for sharing your babies with us. And maybe we'll get your hubby next time.
I know. Yeah.
yeah.
Get him in front of a microphone and a camera. That would be a real
yeah.
challenge.
Well, thank you so much.
Yeah.
And like we said, we'll post everything in the show notes, the links to everything. Please go buy Jen's book. I definitely am going to. I can't wait to read it. And yeah, follow The Golden Ratio 4. make a donation if you
do everything.
Can. Yeah, we'll link to everything, but thank you for being here.
Thank you guys so much.
All right, guys, see ya. Thank you.